Standing on the side of love, Charles Darwin and the wedding at Cana. This sermon title sounds like a total mashup. What possible connection can there be among a Unitarian Universalist call to action, the theory of evolution, and a fairy tale about Jesus turning water into wine? I'll start with the fairy tale. The times were changing at the end of the first century and the beginning of the second century. Jerusalem had been sacked by the Romans. Temple Judaism had become displaced into synagogues, or what we might call chalice communities. Competition between the factions in Judaism that believed Jesus to be the Messiah and those who clung to the old tradition was fierce. Somebody decided to write a proof that Jesus was the one chosen by God to save the world. That person managed to get himself, or herself, identified with one of Jesus' disciples, even though just about all of them were dead by then. The gospel he created is called John. It's probably the most well-known and most loved of all the gospels in the New Testament. Biblical scholars agree that none of the stories reported by John are true. None of the things John claims Jesus said were ever actually said by Jesus. The whole thing was an extended argument, a last-ditch effort to keep John and his friends from being thrown out of the local synagogue. John's fairy tale about Jesus turning water into wine acts as a framework. I'm talking about John as a literary piece of work now. So John's tale about Jesus turning water into wine acts as a framework around two other stories that John tells about Jesus. So first he tells about Jesus attending a wedding in Cana in Galilee, where the wine ran out. Potential disaster was averted when Jesus told the wine steward to use whatever he found in the storage jars that were supposed to contain water. Instead, abracadabra, the jars had the best wine anyone had ever had before. The next story is about a Jewish scholar, a Pharisee named Nicodemus. Nicodemus seems to be clueless about basic Jewish theology, but eventually he comes to believe that Jesus is the Messiah. After the encounter with Nicodemus, which happens in the dark of night, Jesus travels to Samaria. Now, the Samaritans were the enemies of the Jews. In this story, Jesus breaks several taboos. First, he visits the enemy, the Samaritans. Second, he meets a woman at Jacob's well and talks to her. Men were not supposed to talk to women, and vice versa. And three, in the course of his conversation with the woman, he says he has living water to offer her in place of regular well water. And he agrees with her, an enemy Samaritan woman. He agrees with her that the Samaritans got it right when they worshiped God on the mountain. But, he says, it doesn't matter anymore where God is worshipped, because from now on, God will be worshipped in spirit. Which was what Nicodemus had such a hard time understanding. After that, Jesus goes back to Cana, where he had turned the water into wine. So we have a circle going on here. Okay, put that sequence aside for the moment. Water into wine. Nicodemus had no clue. Woman at the well gets the living water. Back to Cana. Okay, hold that. Now let's talk about the theory of evolution, which we've already heard a lot about already this morning. According to that famous website, Wikipedia, evolution is any change across successive generations in the heritable characteristics of biological populations. Evolutionary processes give rise to diversity at every level of biological organization, including species, individual organisms, and molecules such as DNA and proteins. But evolution has jumped out of the strictly scientific box and has become a metaphor. According to my Oxford Dictionary of the American Language, evolution means gradual development, especially from a simple to a more complex form. Synonyms include development, growth, advance, progression, maturation. Okay, hold that thought, along with the one about changing water into wine, Nicodemus and the woman at the well. Okay. Now comes a theologian and biblical scholar from New Zealand named Lloyd Gearing. Lloyd Gearing has published a series of essays entitled Coming Back to Earth, From Gods to Gaia, to God to Gaia. From Gods to God to Gaia. Basically, his thesis is that human spirituality has evolved from the most primitive ideas about spirits inhabiting everything, from rocks to animals, plants, people, multiple gods, such as the Greek and the Roman pantheon, or gods that belong to specific tribes. We went from there to the idea of one universal God. And while that progress is demonstrable, it's not linear. In today's world, there are still people who claim tribal gods and who start wars over the definitions of those gods. Those wars are raging now between progressive and liberal religious traditions and fundamentalists of all varieties. Similarly, in pre-modern times, there were philosophers and religious dissenters who did not buy into the idea of a separate personal god who could be petitioned for relief of grievances. The discussion, to put it simply, was between theists who believed in one God and atheists who believed there was no God. By way of illustration, in the 16th century, the Elizabethan playwright Christopher Marlowe was accused of being an atheist. There was a warrant out for his arrest. He was going to be arrested and tortured for being an atheist. But before the church police could catch him, he was killed in a barroom brawl over a bill on May 30th, 1593. He was 28 years old. Now, along the way, of course, since the 16th century has come the revival of the goddess and feminist theology represented by Elizabeth Cady Stanton in the 19th century. And the 20th century feminist pantheon includes Mary Daly, Rosemary Radford Ruther, and Starhawk. Lloyd Gearing proposes that humanity is now in the midst of a transition, not from theism to atheism, but from theism to secularism. And fundamentalists of all varieties of the Abrahamic faith, Jews, Christians, Muslims, have declared holy war on that transition. We experienced an example of that this past week when the Republican candidates accused President Obama of trying to suppress religious liberty by requiring Catholic institutions to provide birth control as part of their health insurance coverage. Okay, now I'm going to begin to put two of those three threads of this sermon together. There is a place for the stories in the Gospel of John about the wedding at Cana and the Samaritan woman at the well, but only if they are seen as metaphors and are reclaimed for an evolving 21st century understanding of spirit and cosmos. John's metaphor of water into wine frames the vignette with Nicodemus, who had no clue, and the Samaritan woman at the well, and represents not just a transformation, but a transmutation. Water is transmuted into wine. The fairy tale means that if we follow the teachings of Jesus, life becomes something fundamentally different from what it was before. John was not satisfied with cleaning and polishing. John says, "Whoever believes Jesus is the anointed one is changed. Alakazam, from water, even living water, into wine." But this does not mean that your life is saved for heaven in the next life if you believe in a resuscitated corpse. That's not what John meant either, but that's an argument for another day. No, when John says whoever believes Jesus is the anointed one is changed, he means you no longer live your life in the conventional way. You no longer are concerned only with your own well-being, with your own health, wealth, and access to power. Instead, you are concerned with health and well-being of not just yourself, but your community and even the planet. That is the meaning of justice. More than that, it's the meaning of distributive justice. Because it's beyond the idea of simple idea of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. It's beyond the idea that what comes around goes around. It's beyond the idea of reward and punishment, and it's way beyond the idea of justice as payback. And it's for now, not after you die. As I would put it, it's a paradigm shift from injustice and death to justice and life. In other words, when you live in a condition where you are only concerned with your own health, wealth, and access to power, you are spiritually dead. And that condition I would call injustice. For 21st century non-theists, changing water into wine means a fundamental shift in mind and paradigm from fear to love, from greed to sharing, from unjust systems that are the normal consequence of civilization's laws to distributive justice compassion. And you don't have to follow or believe in Jesus for this paradigm shift to occur. Back to Lloyd Gearing. He suggests further that as human spiritual experience evolves from a universal God to secularism, as our cosmology changes because of our understanding of the nature of the universe itself, we see ourselves more and more in relationship to our own planet Earth. So God has become Gaia, planet Earth. When God is seen as Gaia, we can apply the same list of sins against people to the Earth itself. With that understanding, the wrath of God that the Old Testament prophet invokes can be seen as the consequences of misplaced dominion over Earth's resources. That's a bit of a leap. I'm going to say it again. When God is seen as Gaia, we can apply the same list of sins against people to the Earth itself. With that understanding, then, the wrath of God that the Old Testament prophet invokes can be seen as the consequence of misplaced dominion over Earth's resources. Until we stop mountaintop removal, deep-sea oil extraction, fracking for natural gas, unchecked pollutants pouring into the earth, the air, and the water, until women are educated and treated as equal in all ways with men, thereby stopping the explosion of population, until those things happen, we can expect continuing climate change, disruptions to growing seasons, famines, floods. It's the mythic four horsemen of the apocalypse wreaking havoc on life as we know it. When we experience a sustainable earth as the one that provides all life forms with living water and join the work of distributive justice, compassion, then we will have turned water into wine. Well, some of you might be thinking, but I have to feed the kids, or I have to make my Social Security check last, or I have to win the next election. One way we can all participate in the work I have outlined is right here as a member of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Frederick. And here is the final thread of this three-strand braid I've been trying to weave today. To change water into wine, to change the paradigm, to evolve into a beacon of light for ourselves and others is to stand on the side of love. Here are some suggestions. This property is a laboratory for sustainable land use. take care of the building and grounds, develop a wider use of this building and grounds for ourselves and for the local community. We have labyrinth walks. We can open the property for local school field trips. Share the physical space with Kol Ami and the wider community. Offer the physical space for community meetings, programs, projects, music and arts, and don't require money for it. Our building and grounds are a gift. Publicize our own programs, religious education, Buddhist meditation, progressive Christian study and worship, green sanctuary projects, adult spiritual enrichment, chalice communities, social action, Unitarian Universalist spirituality. Speak up when your next door neighbor says or does something bigoted. And attend rallies in support of gays, lesbians, bisexual, transsexual people. It just so happens that in the announcements today, lobby for marriage equality. It's right here in your announcements. The United Church of Christ has organized this. Why didn't we? I mean, the UCC is great. A couple of us have come from the United Church of Christ. So join them tomorrow night. Lobby for marriage equality in Annapolis. Perhaps most important, bless the spaces between us, as Laura Powell said a couple of weeks ago. Respect the democratic process. Keep your word. The Unitarian Universalist Association has designated February as 30 Days of Love, a collective visioning process about making sense of the present moment and what we are called to do. I will read the reflection for day 14 as the last word. There's a lot of healing left to do in this country and in the world. There's a lot of injustice, and we are called as a people to do what we can to counter it. We can fight for justice as individuals, but I would rather do it as a community, guided by a vision. So when someone asks us, "Why are you here?" we can answer, "Because there is evil in the world. It comes in many forms, ranging from brutal and immediate to the complex and bureaucratic. But evil is not the highest power. We are here because love and goodness are the highest power. We are here because love asked us to come, to sit before you and say, 'This cannot happen any longer.'"